Daniel, so last week we did introductory material. Talked about the history leading up. That's very, very important. The historical context, where are they? So what's going on in the nation of Israel during Daniel?
The Babylonian captivity?
Babylonian captivity, indeed.
Wasn't it the third one?
The first one.
First one?
605. Yeah, 605 is Daniel. 597 is Ezekiel. 586 is the final destruction of Jerusalem. And the book of Daniel actually covers that entire time period, but chapter 1 is recording that very first 605 when they first get captured, which we're about to see happen. Daniel wrote it, and he wrote it before all of the things in it happened, because they were predictive prophecy. You need to stress that, because liberals don't like that, and so I emphasize it. I think everything else will be repeated as we trek through. So, we'll go ahead and just jump into the text. We're in chapter 1. Somebody want to read 1 through 7?
I gotta find it in my Bible. I flipped to the end, and then where do I go?
I'm from the middle, and then where do I go?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I can't make the joke like from Revelation. It's at the end of the major prophets.
Got it!
Try and figure that part out.
In the third year of the reign of King Jehoiakim, I think I said that right, of Judah, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon advanced against Jerusalem and laid it under siege. Now the Lord delivered King Jehoiakim of Judah into his power, along with some of the vessels of the temple of God. He brought them to the land of Babylonia, to the temple of his God, and put the vessels in the treasury of his God. The king commanded Ashpenaz, who was in charge of his court officials, to choose some of the Israelites who were of royal and noble descent, young men in whom there were no physical defect, and who were handsome, well-versed in all kinds of wisdom, well-educated, and having keen insight, and who were capable of entering the king's royal service, and to teach them the literature and language of the Babylonians. So the king assigned them a daily ration from his royal delicacies, and from the wine he himself drank, they were to be trained for the next 3 years. At the end of that time, they were to enter the king's service. As it turned out, among these young men were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But the overseer of the court officials renamed them. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar.
Nice, yeah.
Hananiah, he named Shadrach. Mishael, he named Meshach. And Azariah, he named Abednego.
All right. You guys remember the purpose of Daniel that we tried to stress last week?
That he doesn't forget the Jews?
Yeah. God doesn't forget the Jews.
It's like a punishment.
Yeah. And we're going to be emphasizing that God is the true king portion. God's the one in control. He's the one who has the authority in this situation. And this this apparent conquering of Babylon over Israel is not actually so. This is totally under God's control, Babylon. And we see that stressed particularly in verse 2, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into Nebuchadnezzar's hands. We're going to see this power struggle where Babylon keeps trying to assert their authority over Israel in different ways, and God's authority keeps trumping and winning. I can't even say that anymore. God's authority keeps overpowering.
The President of the United States has a last name that sounds like him.
This is the same word.
Is it? Is it? Is the word?
You know how words take on different contexts throughout time and change meanings? That word has changed meaning now.
Mm-hmm. Only if you let it.
Anyway. But a few things to know. So, first of all, verse 3. Well, actually, before that, somebody summarize for me what we just covered in that chapter, or that paragraph.
God delivered Judah into Babylon's hands. A couple of things were taken from Judah's temples into Babylonian temples of a different god. They were to be trained for 3 years, eating what the king ate and drinking what the king drank. There's three guys from Judah. Gave them new names.
Four guys from Judah.
Four guys mm-hmm. from Judah gave them new names.
Yeah. All right, good.
Four.
Yeah, Daniel and his three friends. All right, so verse 3, ESV says king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility. Didn't we have different translations there for the last part of the royal family? Mm-hmm. Didn't that say of the royal family?
Yeah, royal and noble descent.
Nobility. Y'all who have ESV, see a footnote in your Bibles there. Both of the royal family, footnote 1.
And from the seed of royalty and from the nobles.
Yeah. Seed of the kingdom is the most literal translation. I think it's funny that most of the translators choose to put of the royal family instead of putting the word for word translation. Because this is the story, right? This is what the Bible is about. Genesis chapter 3, seed of the serpent, seed of the woman. And so he's telling you where the seed is. The seed of the kingdom.
American Standard Version says, children of Israel, even of the seed royal and of the nobles.
Yeah.
It's not how I put it.
He's telling you the seed from Genesis 3, it's being preserved in this line. It's the people from Judah.
Like I said, preserve Judah.
Yeah.
We're going through Hosea and Monday Night Bible Study, and that's something that came up.
Yeah. It's all over the whole Old Testament. Let's find this seed. And by the way, Israel, you're awful people, but I'm going to work through you. So anyway. They take the youths, and in particular, looking for particular kinds of youth, ones from the seed of the royal family, of the kingdom. What kinds of youth are they looking for?
Without physical defect, handsome, versed in all kinds of wisdom, well-educated, having keen insight, capable of entering the king's royal service, and teach literature and language.
Without blemish, good appearance, skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace. What does it mean to be competent to stand in the king's palace?
Mine just says qualified.
Qualified?
Yeah.
Like, that's all it says?
Well, and qualified to serve in the king's palace.
So, wait, what kind of people would those be?
These four guys.
You're it.
Yeah. Yeah, the cream of the crop. That's
yeah, they're just the most talented and useful.
Yeah. Everybody else is going to go into slavery, subjugation, go into the working classes, etc.
The people worth and preserving and investing in.
Yeah.
Basically, for the king's purpose.
He's going to bring the rest of Israel back in 586 when he destroys the temple. That hasn't happened yet. That's 20 years down the road. But for now, he's just taking the cream of the crop to come serve in Babylonia. He's trying to Chaldeanize, Babylonianize these people. He wants to take the best of the best and make them Babylonians instead of Israelites, destroy their national identity, erase everything about them, assert his power over them.
So, like, natural selection on those?
Yeah. Or specific selection.
Yes. He's breeding.
Yeah, it's what's
so he's like Hitler.
Yeah,
like on all
eugenics.
Crazy
there we go. That's the word I was trying to think of.
True.
That's what I think of when I hear Planned Parenthood nowadays. Eugenics.
Yeah. To teach them the language of the Chaldeans and the literature of the Chaldeans. The Chaldeans are just Babylonians. Another word for Babylonians, the older name. You can really read into that way more than is necessary. And he assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and the wine that the king drank. So Ashpenaz, the chief eunuch, is telling them. You guys know what a eunuch is, right? Yeah. You know why eunuchs are always in the court temple? Like, eunuch is almost synonymous with court official in Bible times. You know why?
It's almost like a priest, I guess?
Not quite. It's because the court officials are going to be around the king and his concubines and wives.
Oh, so there's no temptation there?
Yeah. So they can't be doing any funny business with the king's women.
King's property?
Yeah.
No funny games for you, sir.
That's why court officials are always eunuchs, and that's why, so the higher ranking eunuch you are, the more trusted you are, etc. If you've ever wondered, that's why.
I mean, I knew that's what that
whenever
meant.
Whenever it says eunuch, it means court official, and it means that he's been
castrated
he's so that he can.
Steer of court officials.
Yeah.
Prime candidate.
Was not done with rubber bands or zip ties.
What?
Which
no need to read into that.
The
probably shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
Let's reverse that.
I got that when I was 12.
Oh dear.
Oh.
Like that lesson. Not like the actual physical act.
Okay.
I have zip ties at work.
So.
Don't do that.
Let's move on.
Told him, you're going to eat this food, drink this wine. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. Keep that in mind, particularly when we get to next week. But how long are they going to be educated in the literature, languages of Chaldeans?
3 years.
All right.
Is there any specific significance why they ate the same food and drank the same wine?
Yes, we're going to get to that in just a second, actually. But
okay.
Hold on to that thought.
Pardon me.
But yes, there is.
Way to go, Chris.
Also, from the tribe of Judah, remember, we're following the line of Judah to look for the king, the Messiah, as promised back in Genesis, the end of Genesis 50, the scepter shall not depart from the house of Judah. Right? So this is all part of fulfilling a prophecy. That's why I let you know, oh, these guys are from the tribe of Judah, where this is the royal line, or the royal tribe. And he gives you the four guys' names. What are their names? In Hebrew, please.
The Hebrew name?
Daniel? Belteshazzar, Hananiah, and...
Mishael, Azariah.
Yeah, so there's four guys. Their Hebrew names are Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. All right? All of these names are what's called theophoric.
Oh, I was reading the wrong part.
Theophoric means it contains God's name in them. It references God in the name. So Daniel literally means God is my judge. El is God. It's one of the names. Elohim, you might know that Hebrew word. It's one of the names of God. So Daniel, God, Thou is my judge. Hananiah, Yahweh, God's proper covenant name, seen at the end of that. Yah, Hananiah, so God has been gracious. Mishael, who is what God is. Who can comprehend who is equal to God, essentially. And then Azariah, God has helped. Yah, again, covenant name of God. So all four of these guys have names that very much are linked with the God of Israel, the one true God, the triune God, as we Christians would call it. They get to Babylon, and what does Ashpenaz do?
He changes their names.
To what?
Belteshazzar. Shadrach.
Meshach.
Abednego.
These are also theophoric names, but they're all theophoric names with Babylonian gods. Bel, Aku, Nebu. So Belteshazzar means Bel protects, as opposed to God is my judge.
That makes way more sense.
Shadrach really means...
Nobody ever explained that.
How did you know? Why this name? You just decided to.
Why do two guys get the same initials as his real name, and the other guys get some random name?
Yeah. Again, it's a show of dominance. It's a show of power.
Oh, I get that.
It's saying, we're going to rule over you Israelites, erase your national identity. We're going to erase your God from existence. Your God isn't in control here. And this story is about how, no, their God actually is in control here. And that's the whole book of Daniel.
I was always like, why did Hannah and I get some random name? Everybody else got, like, at least close to, you know, the same initials. That part always, I was like, what the heck?
Yeah, Meshach got the exact same name, except replaced with Aku instead of Elohim.
This was random, but now it makes more sense.
What's even more interesting, though, is that we remember Daniel by his Hebrew name, Daniel, but we remember the other three by their Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Everybody forgets them.
Yeah.
Chris.
The name of
children
the
for our songs.
We'll get to that when we actually get to the fiery furnace. I'll suggest some reasons why we always remember those names instead. We'll keep going. Verses 8 through 10.
Do you think there's a reason why in the ASV that I'm looking at,
yeah,
Abednego is hyphenated?
Yeah, because in Hebrew it's not one word. So they're trying to more closely represent. These are all English representations of actual Hebrew letters, which I don't have my... They don't look anything like English, so
yeah.
It gets... lost a whole lot.
Okay.
You'll also see it spelled differently based on what year your translation is from. Sometimes Hananiah has two N's, sometimes it has one.
It's too much.
Meshach sometimes gets spelled with a K, same with Shadrach. It's just, we're trying to represent a foreign language in English letters, so it doesn't matter exactly how you do it. Alright, 8 through 10. Somebody want to read those?
But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's dainties. That's the word it uses.
I believe you. His dainties. For food.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God made Daniel to find kindness and compassion in the sight of the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your food and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse looking than the youths that are of your own age? So would ye endanger my head with the king.
Alright, so the plan was these guys are going to eat from the king's food, drink his wine, and Daniel has other plans. What's he say? What's he decide to do?
He doesn't want to eat it.
Resolves in his heart that he will not, what?
Defile himself.
Defile himself with the king's food. What does that mean? How is he going to defile himself with the king's food?
He's going to be eating food that was forbidden for Moses, so they would be unclean, and there'd be no way to to make sacrifices to allow for purification.
Correct. Yeah, there's a no way to take care of that particular, and they're not supposed to eat that food anyway. Babylonians are eating pork. They're having bacon, having a grand old time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jews are, I said Jews, the Israelites are sitting there. We can't eat that. Same with the wine. There's kosher wine, that specific wine that's fermented in a specific way so that Israelites can rightly drink it. And if you want the kosher laws, go read Leviticus and Deuteronomy again. We've studied that stuff. You know what's all in there, right?
Oh, yeah. Backwards and forwards.
Yeah. So, I mean, what does the text say he did to decide this? I love this word.
Resolved.
He resolved this. I think the Christian translation said he purposed in his heart. What does Net put there?
Made up his mind.
He decided. It's emphatic.
Nothing's going to change his mind.
Exactly. I think of Jonathan Edwards' resolutions. Have y'all ever heard of Jonathan Edwards' resolutions? You should Google it sometime if you haven't. Just Google Jonathan Edwards' resolutions. It'll come up. He had a list of, I think, I don't want to guess the number because I'll get it wrong, but resolved to fill in the blank. Live his life a certain way in accordance with God's law. So what does he do since he's resolved this way? Halfway through verse 8.
He goes and asks for permission.
Therefore, he asks permission. He's not going to just willy-nilly just disobey orders. He's going to be respectful, do it the right way. Ask the chief of the eunuchs, Ashpenaz, to allow him not to defile himself. Look, I've got a moral problem with this arrangement. Can something be worked out?
I'm about to do your hand.
Yeah.
That's it.
And what does verse 9 say? He asked the eunuch, but who gave him favor?
God
gave him favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. When we first hear his response, we don't really understand how this is compassion, right? But what does the chief eunuch say? Give me the paraphrase version so I understand. You know the meaning.
He basically says, look, I kind of fear my king who's telling me the instruction to give to you guys. If you don't do this, it's my head on the chopping block.
Yeah. My king's already cut off some things. I don't want him to cut off other things.
Oh, no. What is it?
Thank you.
He's like, look, if you guys don't eat this food and then you get weak and you're no longer the cream of the crop, that's why we picked you.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah. I'm going to get killed. So how do you plan to solve this problem? He didn't actually say that. He just, would you endanger my head with the
why
camp?
Why would you do this to me?
Yeah.
I've given up so much already.
Why are you making my life difficult?
Come on, dude.
And Daniel, as we're going to see throughout the book of Daniel, he is definitely a diplomat. He is a peacemaker. Verse 11, then Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, and I am Mishael and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see.
He's starting to expect a different person there.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, he just took the chief units, and then why does the steward have anything to do with it?
Yeah.
Sorry.
He's following the chain of command.
So he basically, the eunuch didn't say no.
Yeah.
And so he's like, okay, well, let's give this, let's try this out.
Yeah.
So the next guy who was actually in charge of him, personally?
Yeah. Well,
the one who was assigned to watch over them?
Yeah, somebody lower than the chief of the eunuchs.
Or like his...
Yeah, his...
The guy that's over him.
Yeah. Okay. What does he suggest?
Give us this, let the other guys do whatever they want, and if we end up looking worse at the end of the week, go ahead and feed us whatever you want.
Yeah. And
pretenders.
Puts his God to the test, right? I'm following God's law, so I believe that God will provide for me. He's also being quite diplomatic. He's saying, your issue is this. Your issue is that we won't, our appearance will be frail, we'll become weaker. So, if we are weaker, you have a valid point. If we're not, then you don't. So, he's very logical, reasonable.
And it's like a reasonable amount of time to ask them.
Yes, and
it's
a amount of time.
It's good enough to sort of like not really have any negative consequences, but
exactly.
If you know, something was going to happen, that would have been the time.
So, what I want to stress is Daniel is definitely the peacemaker. He's a reasonableist, if you want to put it that way. I can't say that word without thinking of Parks and Recreation, but the reasonableists. Wait, no. Why are you looking at me like that?
No,
but Daniel is a very reasonable person. Which is going to become important later, but... puts me to the test. Now, there's something I have to address, two things. One is this fad that we have in Christianity now called the Daniel Fast. Have you guys heard of the Daniel Fast?
I'm sure I have.
Lots of churches will do it. The whole church will do the Daniel Fast, and they'll fast for the whole month, and they'll eat only vegetables and water, because that's what Daniel and his three friends did.
Never heard that.
Technically speaking, the fast that they did was 10 days with vegetables and water for the purpose of seeing if they would get weaker or not. So if that's the purpose of your fast, by all means, do the Daniel fast. Next time the Babylonians are telling you that you can't eat
you have to eat bacon.
You have to eat bacon and you're following the Jewish kosher laws.
Just ask to give 10 days. To see
by all means, do the Daniel fast.
Context.
Context. This thing that we have in Christianity, let's pull something out of context and give it a catchy name and talk about how we're all spiritual and everything. That said, fasting is a good thing. It is a good spiritual discipline to practice.
So it's more about recognizing what fasting is.
Yes.
Then.
Just randomly doing it.
The application
like
of Daniel's methods.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, if you're just taking Daniel's methods and not recognizing the purpose of a fast, you're missing the point. You can, by all means, copy Daniel's methods as long as you do so intentionally and do it with the proper theology of fasting in mind. So I give you a brief biblical theology of fasting here. What we see in the Bible, first of all, three basic motives for embarking on a fast. One is leadership preparation. That's the most common one in the New Testament. When we select a new leader, he will fast and pray in order to prepare himself for the role. So, men, if you are ever planning on becoming elders or deacons in your church, it is proper to fast prior to taking on that responsibility to make sure that you are spiritually mature enough to handle such a responsibility. Women, if you're planning on teaching, becoming a mother, other things that would require leadership, fasting is a great thing to do. Intercession is one that we only see in the Old Testament, but still, by all means, something specific that you are praying for and intentionally asking God to occur, and you fast as a means of focusing your body and your mind on that request. And then humility, recognizing your sin, and so depriving your body of something that it needs that you might become more aware of your sinful nature and dependence upon God. Those are the proper motivations for fasting. An improper motivation for fasting is, my church said we're all going to fast. Know why you're doing
it. I don't like the way I look.
Yeah, I don't like the way I look. I need to drop 5 pounds, so we're going to do the Daniel fast. Yeah. Length of time that we see in the Bible, we see 1-day fasts and 3-day fasts are the most common. We also see 7-day fasts, 14-day fasts, 21-day fasts, and 2 times we see 40-day fasts. That's with Moses and Jesus. If you're doing a 40-day fast, you are preparing for being a legitimate pope.
Oh.
Me back.
I'm back. Yeah.
Hey, my baby.
My little.
Good night. So those are the lengths of times. I honestly haven't ever met anybody who does more than 7-day fasts in this day and age. It's pretty... The longest I've done is 2 days. I can't. There's also types of fasts in terms of how many people are doing it. So corporate fast, by all means, is a good thing, as long as everyone in the corporate people who are fasting together is fasting for the same motive and for the same purpose, doing it properly. And then, in the Bible, fasting only relates to food. You either don't eat any food, or you don't eat any food or drink anything, or you only eat specific foods like Daniel and his 3 friends did. I do think that the spiritual discipline of giving something up, sacrifice, is very related to fasting. It's just not the same thing as fasting. So, fasting from your phone sort of thing. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You're not going to, like, argue if you're like, I'm fasting from technology.
The Bible doesn't say to fast from technology.
You're a terrible person.
That's one of those things where it's like, yeah, okay.
Whatever. The idea is you're giving something
up
because you
recognize
the problem.
Got it.
You know?
But I also need to clarify, Daniel and his 3 friends weren't fasting here.
No, they were.
Did you notice? None of the 3 motives, leadership, preparation, intercession, or humility, were...
It's a test. It's a test.
Yeah. This is not a spiritual fast.
For them. That's
exactly.
This is normal for them.
This is going to be their new regular diet, and so they're proving themselves before the Babylonian leaders that they can survive on this. Showing that God is in control. They're not doing this for spiritual maturity or for intercession or anything, like a fast is. So that bugs me on a whole other level, the idea
that
we're doing a quote-unquote Daniel fast and modeling it after a point in time when they weren't fasting.
Yeah.
When you could flip over to chapter 9 when Daniel actually fasts and model it that after that.
I've never really heard the term Daniel fast before.
Yeah, I have, but that's kind of hilarious.
It is really funny. That's going to be another thing I think now I'm going to like start paying attention to. Context is one.
That said, fasting is a great thing. It's a very helpful thing. Good thing to do. Good spiritual discipline to practice. Just make sure you're doing it for the right reason. I also, if anybody wants to borrow this, this is a great little thing that one of my classmates made up. It's a spiritual life fasting retreat. Essentially, we spent the whole weekend and we fasted together, and he taught the biblical theology of fasting and did a really great job with it. If anyone wants to borrow my notes, feel free. So, he says, test us. We'll eat only vegetables, drink only water, and then you can see what we look like at the end. The end of verse 13. Deal with your servant according to what you see. Somebody want to pick up 14 through 16?
Thank you. So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine, and they were to drink and and the wine they were to drink, and gave them vegetables instead.
Hmm. Nice.
So it worked.
You ruined everything for us, Daniel. We're eating bacon.
We
now
love
we have these
stuff.
Vegetables and water. It's a nightmare.
I have a question. Would these other people also be Jews that were
yes.
eating the food?
And I don't know, not necessarily all of them.
Not all of them, but a majority.
But there would be other Jews there.
From Jews, or from Judah.
Good observation.
They would be in violation.
Correct.
By eating this.
So Daniel and his four friends are the only four who are requesting that they be allowed to follow God's law, and other Jews from Judah along with them are not. They're capitulating.
Sort of like, and then now they're going to have to submit.
Yeah.
Involuntarily.
Yeah, and the grammar is not clear if verse 16, so the steward took away their food and drink and gave them vegetables, if
who
that means. Yeah, if we're talking about all of the youth,
yeah.
Or just Daniel and his four friends, he continued to give them vegetables and water. Not clear.
I think I've always sort of interpreted this like.
Everybody?
No, I think I always interpreted this them, because it's like, it worked, so.
Yeah.
But I mean,
take it away. But it's not clear.
Verse 17 might give a little bit of an indication. The ESV renders it well. As for these four youths. So it might be that verse 16 is referring to everyone. They all got their food taken away and given vegetables because those four appeared more healthy. As for these four, let's focus in on the four. But again, the grammar's not absolutely clear. So.
Yeah.
We'll leave it up to your personal preference. I'm sure that Daniel meant one of those two things when he wrote the sentence. I just don't know which. And when we get to heaven, we can ask him. So they got through the test. Now, a recognition of authority. So, God proved himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
You thought you needed that food. You know, when you follow God's law, his dietary restrictions, he actually blesses the following of his rules. Now, we don't have those dietary restrictions because Acts 10 happened. Praise the Lord. But
so you can go to Fogo de Chao all you want.
So you can go to Fogo de Chao and get a Dr. Pepper cowboy with bacon. If you can. But the point is, the principle to draw out of this is Daniel and his friends humbled themselves in the face of massive pressure and said, we're going to follow God's law instead of capitulate, follow the culture. And God blessed them for it. Verses 17 through 19.
Now as for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all vision and dreams. And at the end of the days which the king had appointed for bringing them in, the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king.
So, this is kind of like a transition summary sentence. Or paragraph, I might say. First of all, what about these four youths? How do they get described? After their quote unquote fast,
they were provided knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom.
And Daniel in particular had a special gift. What was that?
Understanding and visions and dreams.
Yeah, so that's one of those foreshadowing things, because the rest of the book of Daniel is all about visions and dreams and Daniel understanding them. And then at the very end, crazy twist, not understanding it. He specifically says, I don't understand this.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to come back to that verse when we get there in weeks and weeks and weeks. But understanding in all visions and dreams, at the end of the time when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, how long was that?
At the end of 3 years?
3 years. That's what it seems to be referencing.
Yeah, set by the king.
So at the end of the 3 years, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says, and after that they were to enter the king's service. That says after being trained for 3 years.
Yeah. So, I gave you my... I'm finally learning Hebrew well enough to start translating things. So, take this with a grain of salt, because I'm not that great in Hebrew, but this is my translation. At the end of the time of the king commanding that they should be brought in. The reason I've rendered it that way is because if you look down in verse 2, or chapter 2, verse 1, what does it say?
Second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had many dreams. His mind was
troubled and left him.
He suffered from insomnia.
Yeah, so if you know the story of Daniel 2, he has this dream that can't be interpreted. They go and they get Daniel eventually, and Daniel comes in and he interprets the dream. The question I have, though, is if this is in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, and earlier we've already been Nebuchadnezzar's reigning and 3 years of training, that means that chapter 2 happens in the middle of verse 18. You with me?
Oh, boy.
Oh, gosh.
Say it one more time.
Ugh. All of chapter 2 happens in the middle of verse 18.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it's not linear.
Correct.
So he was technically in the middle of 2 years, of that 3 years.
That's
the second year of his reign.
That's how I'm reading it. And I didn't find any commentators who pointed this out, but I can't see any way around that understanding. So what I'm thinking is, verses 17 through 19 is like this summary statement saying, this is how they got into the king's good standing. They were brought before the king, stood before the king. And then, starting in verse 20 and through chapter 2, they're describing those events, how their time got cut short in the second year of King Nebuchadnezzar's reign. They were brought before him, and he got... This is just an observation of Stephen, so none of the scholars I found actually
addressed
this, so I might just be misreading this and making a mountain out of a molehill.
You should address it.
Yeah, I'm going to bring it up with Dr. Klingler next time I meet with him to talk about Daniel. It could just be that second year of King Nebuchadnezzar's reign actually is after those 3 years because Nebuchadnezzar wasn't reigning. The reign of kings is very loosey-goosey. When a king's reigning, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's reigning.
We're going to run into chapter, some of those problems. Verse 1 says King of Babylon, so it sounds like he was already established.
Yeah.
Or, just become established. But in his second year, that means he would have jumped on it. He became king and, jumped on this vanquishing everybody.
And that's what, verse 19, and the king spoke with them, and among them all was none was found, like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they stood before the king. It seems like that sentence is summarizing chapter 2, how he came to the conclusion that none was found like them.
Mm-hmm.
Because chapter 2 describes him coming to the conclusion that none of them are as wise as them.
Yeah.
Just something to think about. We might dive into it more if I discover that this is a real thing. But,
worried about it.
Yeah.
I'm seeing this.
Yeah. Yeah. People in theology don't get to do that. regardless if this is before or after, two things I want to point out. They stood before the king. So this is that juxtaposition, right? And what names are they called when they're standing before the king?
Daniel. And the other ones.
And Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They're Hebrew names, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're Yahweh theophoric names. They don't get referenced by their Babylonian names as they're standing before the king. It's this subtle way that Daniel kind of
keeps his
sticks it.
Heritage says, intact?
By the way, God is standing before the king of Babylon. He has not been conquered.
It's about 121 where it says, now Daniel lived until the first year of Cyrus the king. It sort of sums up
a whole lot
story, and then it goes into the second year. So it's like it skips ahead
It skips way ahead. Yeah. So this, I think verses 18 through 21 are all skipping ahead. And then it goes back.
Agreed.
Because, yeah, King Cyrus is three kings down the line from Nebuchadnezzar. We're going to get to know Nebuchadnezzar real well in chapters 2 through 4. And we're going to get to see him become a believer. It's going to be great.
Yay!
We will get to meet Nebuchadnezzar one day. And that thought warms my heart.
It's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
You always, like, you read these things, you're like, oh, he finally understands. That's great. And then you move on in your life. Then you say something like, and we'll see him in the end. And you're like, that's right. There's more than just, oh, that's really fun. You know, that's a good story.
We tell him, like, we talk to her, like, what was it like when you were eating the grass of the field as a beast?
Do you remember what it's like being pretending you were a cow for a few years?
And he's going to go praise God that he humbled me. He probably won't do it in English, but...
No, yeah. I'm sure we'll be able to understand at this point.
That's all I have for you guys tonight. We'll pick up in chapter 2. I'll let you know by Sunday how far into chapter 2. I'm thinking what we might do with these long chapters of visions is we might do like one night we'll overview it all, and then the next week we'll...
piece it out.
We'll piece it out.
It might be a good idea.
So we might spend 2 weeks on one chapter to cover it all twice.
It's probably a good idea for Daniel, especially like later in the text.
Yeah. Definitely as we get further and further into Daniel, it gets more and more confusing and complicated, so having read it before you show up here will be helpful. Having a first pass and trying to think through what it means.